like many coaches who become coaches, there's always that feeling that you're the one people come to talk to.
Yeah.
And when that would happen for me, and I could see I was helpful, I would get this rush of euphoria.
Mm.
Like, really, really, though. Like, quite visceral, shaky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my body knew, before my brain knew, that this was what I wanted to do.
Hi, and welcome back to the Unconventionalist Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRousse, and this is the show about what it's really like to turn your message into a movement. And I've got a very exciting guest today who's just come out with a brand new book. We'll get to talk about that in a second. But before we do that, I wanted to invite you that if you've been thinking about launching your own podcast, if you've been watching or listening to The Unconventionalist for maybe a week or 4 years, and you've been thinking, hey, I really want to do that. I'd love to sit down with inspiring people and share their stories and go into the depths of their soul and pull out all the best bits about their journey so you can learn and you can share, then I've got a podcast bootcamp workshop kicking off on the 20th of September 2019. It's going to be a small, intimate group of people coming together, and I'm going to teach you everything I know about successfully launching a podcast from scratch. I'm going to teach you all the mistakes I made so you can avoid them. And I've had some amazing results so far. We've had over 300 people come through the program. All the information is on theunconventionalist.com. There'll also be a link below the show note. And I think the early bird tickets are still available by the time this comes out. If it's not, you'll get the next bracket. But either way, I'd love to see you there. So today's guest is Rhonna Steinberg, who just came out with a book called Live Out Loud, a masterclass in being yourself. Now, I'm excited to get Rhonna on the show to talk about many things, but more importantly, I think this is something more than ever today people are struggling with, is the ability to embrace who you are and allow the world to experience for who you are. Rhonna, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. And just a note.
Yeah.
It's pronounced Rhonna.
Rhonna. Thank you. Rhonna. Rhonna, ladies and gentlemen.
Rhonna.
What did I say? Rhonna?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rhonna. That's my dyslexia. I often pronounce things differently. How are you doing?
That's good.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Mm-hmm. Really fine. Although,
yep,
it has to be said, it's the hottest day in the year.
It is, isn't it?
Preceded by
yeah,
the hottest night in the year.
Was it hot last night?
Oh,
it was hot. That's why I slept
word.
So badly.
It was so hot. Yeah. And then doing a podcast with you, feeling a bit nervous.
That's okay. If you do me a favor, just put the microphone a little bit tilted towards you. There you go. So if you take the actual microphone, tilt
like
it towards your, yeah, tilt it towards your chin.
Yeah.
Now we can hear you loud and crisp. That's so much better.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Marvelous.
Perfect. Yeah. So what are you nervous about?
Well, I was really thinking about this because, by the way, this is kind of the out loud, out loudness.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, what am I nervous about? And I was thinking the reason why it's a bit nerve wracking is, I've been interviewed before a bit, but this feels like a bit more professional.
Ooh.
I know, we're in like what looks a bit like a studio.
Yeah.
I've got these weird
headphones.
And I've got to lean very far into, there's quite a lot to remember to do.
Yes.
And then it's just that bit about looking good.
Mm. Making sure that you look good.
Yeah, professional.
I get that.
Not messing up.
Yeah.
And all of that.
Yeah.
Even like now, I think I'm losing my voice is good.
Yeah.
All of that.
I get that.
Is part of being out loud.
Yeah. Cool. So what would make it more relaxing for you? What would be something that we could do right now to kind of help you ease into the space?
It's this. So it's talking about really what is going on for me.
Sure.
That is always my route into, because even now, I'm relaxing.
Sure.
Because I've named.
Yeah. The feeling, the emotion. Yeah. The experience.
And being myself.
Yeah. I get that. And for people who can't see, you've got an absolutely fabulous necklace, which looks like an Instagram, but it's a camera. It's an old school camera.
Yeah.
But you're not filming. Amazing. Are you filming? You're a spy. People think you're a spy.
People think I'm a spy. I mean, the thing is, people always say, I really love your necklace.
Yeah.
is it a real camera? And then I say, no.
Maybe.
But I might be a spy.
Yeah.
And they, for that second, they think, is she a spy?
Would a spy say that? But a spy would say that.
Exactly. That's double thing.
Yeah. That's very clever.
Yeah.
Cool. So I was trying to remember, how do we meet? And I'm trying to remember.
That's a good question.
Was it through CTI? Was it through Karina Gordon? But I couldn't remember.
Yes.
Because I feel like we've been in the system. Like I've seen you for a few years, but I couldn't pinpoint when we first met.
I remember totally.
Please.
So we were in one of those CTI workshops, I think.
And for people who don't know CTI, it's formerly known as the Coaching Training Institute, now known as Coactive Training Institute. Yes. And so we were one of those kind of, was it one of those afternoons, community, morning things?
Yes. And we got it, they often do exercises and they say, work with someone you haven't worked with before.
Yeah.
So we gravitated towards one. Well, I gravitated towards, you probably didn't gravitate towards me at all.
Who knows?
I don't know. And we had to do some kind of weird role play.
Okay.
And I think I did what I normally do, which was overdo it. And you were really nice, but looked a bit like, I've got to get away. I really need to. You know, and you were playing along with me, but I did see that slight worry in your eye. Okay. Like, why am I twinned with the mad woman? I get that a lot.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So that must have been what, like 2013, 2014?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's been a journey.
Yeah.
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 And how's your journey been?
Amazing.
Yeah.
My journey has been quite incredible, honestly, because how far back should we go?
Well, I mean, one of the things that it's always this balance, right, on the show between we love to hear a bit of a background. So just in terms of like, hey, how did you end up being the human you are today? And like, you know, what was the journey of you having to unravel the layers in order to do what you want to do? And also, hey, here's some practical stuff that you can take away and actually can implement. Yeah. So because how do you describe yourself? Like now, this is the, you know, the multiple question that everyone kind of dreads or loves. It's like, you know, so you had a party and someone says, hey, so what do you do? Like, what do you say?
I say I'm the out loud coach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And they say, oh, what does that mean?
Okay.
And I say, well, I help people become more self-expressed.
Okay. Yeah.
In an out loud kind of way. Okay. And quite often people will say, oh, I don't think that's for me.
Mm.
And I have to then explain, well, it's not about, because I feel like they think I'm
it's
going
about
to
shouting.
Make them, be really, really noisy and extrovert and fun.
Yeah.
And it's not about that.
Right. So what is it about?
It's about really being yourself.
Mm.
Being self-expressed. Truly, truly. Because I think being yourself is quite hard.
Yeah.
I always imagine, you know, when you go, like even today, I said to someone, how should I prepare for this podcast? And they said, oh, just be yourself.
Yeah.
But that's quite hard. Mm. And so being yourself, it's about, as you said, taking the layers off and making a really deep exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And that will need, to go back to your question around, you know, what was your journey? It will need a bit of a journey to go back to the essence of who you really are.
Yeah.
So that's why I said to you, you know, God, I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
Start when I was really little.
Well, I mean, and one of the, okay, so here's an interesting, at what point in your life did you realize you weren't living who you were? When was that moment you'd be like, oh,
yeah,
I've become this version
of me? So I think I had that creeping sense for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
To cut a long story short, I was one of those, I was a very cheerful little girl and I always did my homework and I did my exams and I was really proficient at passing exams, like many people. And somewhere along the line, I sort of switched myself down. I turned my volume down a bit in order to reach a certain... Sorry.
It's okay. It won't be the first time it happened.
In order to reach a certain kind of proficiency.
Yeah.
And I chose law as my subject at university, which was... I can see why today I chose it. And I don't want to make myself wrong.
Sure.
But it wasn't perhaps my truest self-expression. Mm-hmm. And I found it really hard.
Mm.
And so I went through many iterations. I had my kids. I stayed at home with my kids at a point where you know, women were really beginning to hit the workplace and believed that they could do many things. Mm. And I believed that too, but I wanted to be at home, so I felt wrong again. You know, there was a lot of feeling a bit wrong.
Did you end up in law? Did you end up in law after university?
Yes. I qualified and I became a lawyer.
Yeah.
And it was fine, but I always felt a bit weird.
What, like, this is not really me.
Yeah. But, and I would get very stressed and the responsibility and... Law is a very logical subject.
Sure.
And it's a bit like playing chess.
Okay.
I'm not that good at that kind of thing. I'm not very mathematical.
Yeah.
And I'm more imaginative and people-oriented. Yeah. And I like making up stories and I like finding out about what's going on for you.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit for hours with a law document. I don't think anyone does, actually. But I really, really didn't.
Yeah.
So,
And I'm curious, like, looking back at it now from this place of living out loud that you're kind of now living, would you, A, have gone to university in the first place? And B, if so, what subject would you have picked?
Yes, I would have gone to university. Definitely.
Yeah.
Because I loved university.
Yeah. Where did you go?
Cambridge.
Ah, which college?
Clare.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, my cousins and uncle and a bunch of people went to Cambridge, so...
Yeah. I mean, it was fantastic. I got into Cambridge...
Do you say you read law? Is that what you say when you go to Cambridge?
Of course!
Why do you say... can you explain to the common mortals of us who haven't been to Cambridge or Oxford, why do people say, when talking about Cambridge, and I think Oxford, say read law as opposed to studied?
I think that's one of those things that when you go to Oxbridge... People start saying funny things and you just go along with it without really knowing why they say it.
Okay.
So I would definitely have had that experience of why are they saying that? In a bit like on my first night, I was invited to have sherry with my tutor.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Because my dad had sherry.
Yeah.
But I'd never had sherry. Why are they serving me sherry?
Yeah, you're like 18.
It's like really weird.
Yeah.
And then on the first night, you have to put your gown on.
Yeah.
And go and dine in hall.
Yeah.
What's that? Like, why?
It's very Harry Potter-esque.
Yeah, but you kind of go, do it.
Yeah.
Because everybody sort of... Nowadays, I'd just say, why are we doing this? I would say...
You go along with it.
Go along with it.
Yeah. Bystander effect. I love that. Cool. So you did that and then... So what would you have studied?
I would have studied... well, they didn't have coaching as a degree then.
Yeah.
If they had had coaching as a degree, I would have studied coaching.
Got it. What's but the closest thing to that, do you reckon? Like
psychology,
social psychology.
Yeah, I should have done that.
Yeah.
Something like that. I get that. But on the other hand, if I had done that, perhaps I would have gone through the door too early.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. I think there's the commonality I see between all the stories that sit across me is that whether you like this sentence or not, or you despise it, it's like, seems that things happen for a reason. It's like, had you not gone through that iteration, if you'd not gone at home, you would have not. Yeah. Well, how did you end up discovering coaching? Like, how did coaching come into your life?
It was really amazing because I don't know whether you can imagine kind of roads. You probably can because you're a coach.
Yeah.
Roads that start getting all, they're sort of like you have lots of roads and then the roads start, you end up at a bit of a dead end.
Sure.
And I'd always been somebody who knew what to do.
Yeah.
And I found myself, I went back to work. Mm-hmm. I was trying to find the work that I longed to do. Mm-hmm. I found myself working in a particular job which was not making me happy. But I didn't know how to change. And my go-to, which was normally, well, I'll have a chat with myself or I'll drive other people mad and... Yeah. My friends, my family, no one was help. I wasn't coming up with my answers. Mm. And the place I was working was, they represented coaches. Mm-hmm. And one of the coaches was very keen for me to explore other avenues. And she kept on saying, you should go and see this coach friend of mine. Mm. And I thought, I don't want to. That's for other, you know. That is
what was your perception of coaching back then?
Oh, well, by then I was kind of working in coaching.
Okay.
But I thought it was for, I thought if you go to see someone like that, You were a bit needy.
Mm.
And you had problems.
Okay.
And that's not how I saw myself.
Got it. It's for someone else.
For somebody else.
Was it
else.
I don't need a coach, or I'm not that kind of person who's going to go and see a coach?
That one, the latter. Okay. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
And because I was very proud.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very tightly wound mm-hmm. in. And I was full of law and competence. And she said, go and see a coach. And eventually I had this specific moment, I talk about it in the book, where I was walking along Notting Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going past this sandwich place and thinking, I really don't know what to do. For the first time in my life, honestly,
how
I don't
are you?
Know what to do. I was, well, I'm 62 now. Mm-hmm. And I must have been about 48, okay. something like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to phone that coach.
Mm.
And that was the shift.
Mm.
Because it was just phoning her.
Yeah.
And saying, can I come and see you, that I changed. It was like a flip. Because I was now thinking, I need help.
Yeah.
I can't do this on my own.
Yeah.
And I'm admitting that I need something from someone, and that was a real. And then the next thought was, okay, I'm gonna leave my job,
yeah,
and I'm gonna explore coaching.
Mm-hmm. So when you decided to quit your job, had you already contacted this coach and spoken to this coach?
Or it was in the moment of phoning.
Okay.
Honestly, it was like
something shifting.
Yeah, and even though I went through the process and I went to see her and all of it.
Yeah.
It was when I phoned her that I knew
something was.
I'm gonna change now.
Yeah,
I've got to change because I'd reached a complete dead end in myself, and I just wanted. There was so much inside me that I wanted to be expressed.
Yeah.
I wanted to be with people, and I wanted to help people,
and
use what I knew I had inside me. And it was that voice that was rising up and saying, come on, how long are you going to wait?
Mm. What do you think was the longing?
Although I was lawyery and professional, you know, when I was with my friends or if I met people, like many coaches who become coaches, there's always that feeling that you're the one people come to talk to.
Yeah.
And when that would happen for me, and I could see I was helpful, I would get this rush of euphoria.
Mm.
Like, really, really, though. Like, quite visceral. Shaky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my body knew before my brain knew that this was what I wanted to do.
Hmm.
And I still get that soaring sense when I'm helping, when I'm with a client and we're opening them up to something that they didn't know they had inside.
Yeah.
I get that feeling of euphoric.
It's a common journey. We had a conversation a few months ago when I was doing like a research project in coaches and the commonality, there were a few things, but one of the biggest things I kept on hearing why people had either gone into coaching or, you know, enjoyed still coaching years down the line was that direct impact that they could feel and see in front of them.
Yeah.
That it wasn't some imaginative or having to, you know, not very tangible kind of impact, but like the person in front of them had a shift and they could see the person going through something big or changing or coming home to themselves or as you would say, living out loud. And I love that. How many years now you've been coaching?
It's more than 10, 12 years.
12 years, yeah. 12 and you still get that feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what's amazing is the notion that at this age, I see the possibility of transcending my body and using my spirit to fully live, if that makes sense.
What do you mean by that? Yeah, for people listening to this are just going, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So I've been thinking a lot about, in fact, I wrote a blog this week about aging.
Oh, I saw your post on Instagram yesterday.
Yeah.
You were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
how the body starts to slightly wear out.
Mm-hmm.
Not massively.
Yeah, but you feel it. Like, you know, I'm in my 30s and I'm feeling
right,
that.
Right, you feel it. And it's like, that's quite scary.
Mm.
You think, is this it?
Mm.
And then something else can come in. So if you allow yourself to think about that, that is scary.
Mm.
Okay, fine.
Mm.
And not pretend it's not there.
Mm.
That allows space for other thoughts to come in, which is, yeah, but I have all these deep feelings and things that I know, and I don't have to worry about so much about this body
mm-hmm.
anymore.
Mm.
I can really tap into what else is inside me. And that doesn't really age, unless you're really unlucky, of course.
Mm.
Who knows what will happen to the brain.
Mm.
But if you stay connected to your spirit is... I don't know, but... I don't think it dies.
Yeah, what's your relationship to death?
I'm scared of it, but when I get quite quiet and sense it, like, yeah, it's. I think just go to sleep.
Mm. What are you afraid of?
The unknown, maybe the unknowing of what's on the other side.
Mm.
Like what do we go, where do we go, what happens? I think that.
Yeah. I get that. Are you religious? Do you have faith? Do you have
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm Jewish.
Yeah.
And that's very important to me. I mean, it's the mystery of life. And I think a lot of the feelings that I have inside me are informed by my Jewishness, my memories and my soul, Jewish soul.
Mm-hmm.
The sensitivities and the sadness, sometimes a lot of sadness and pain.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling other people's pain. I think that is very connected to being a Jew.
Yeah. Because the reason I'm always asking is I'm always fascinated to hear, first of all, because I have a very kind of similar dynamic relationship to death where I'm afraid of death.
Mm.
For some reason, it's the one thing in life that when I think about, I'll have these micro panic attacks of just going like, oh my God, I'm going to die. The people I love are going to die.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I can do about it. Yeah. So I'm like, I've been exploring this around, is this about control?
Yeah.
This is about the unknown. This is about feeling like I've got so much I want to do in life and I may run out of time.
Mm.
And I'm often curious to see, is there a relationship between being at peace or surrendering more to the idea of death and having more a religious practice?
Mm.
And people who have more faith, whatever religion it is, do they find death a little bit more less threatening and less scary because there's that answer to the question of what happens next or what have you? And actually last night, we had this wonderful... dinner with my parents, came over visiting over for their wedding anniversary, and it was really interesting because I discovered some stuff from my dad which I didn't really know about, and it turns out my mum's religious, right? So she's Christian Anglican, and my dad is turns out to be more spiritual. He's not a religious person, but he's spiritual. Like, he feels stuff and believes he feels spirits and whatever you want to call it, and we talked about death, that conversation about, you know, how do you feel that having a faith, having a belief, somehow shapes your perspective on death differently or your relationship to it?
I think lurking in the background is that sense of we're here for a reason.
Mm.
And that feeling of... we're here now on this world now, and this is this life that we're having. And I don't sense that it ends here.
Mm.
So I suppose... suppose there is a different... I suppose so.
Yeah.
I suppose it does make... I suppose it does somehow. Yes.
So why do you think you're here? What do you think is your gift on this planet, on this earth, to give?
I think that I'm here to help people feel okay about who they are.
Mm.
In the deepest sense. Mm. So I just remember growing up and switching things around. Like the way people would condemn other people.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that.
Mm.
I remember a particular time I was away and with friends, and a friend of mine, you know, it was all girls together in a dorm, and she'd done something that the others didn't approve of because it didn't fit, you know, all that. And we were quite young, and I just thought, that's horrible. It's horrible what we do.
Mm.
Like, we make other people wrong and different.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I like to see the positivity in the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to say, for example, if you told me you were shy and you felt bad about being shy,
mm-hmm.
I would encourage you to be shy.
Mm.
Like, you don't need to fix it.
Mm.
Because being shy is, there's so much in that, being quiet and maybe reserved and thoughtful, all of that.
Yeah.
I think that's really fantastic.
And do you find it challenging to keep that same curiosity towards people who you might have an opinion about, especially in the public sphere, like thinking about politics, especially what's going on right now in the UK?
Yeah.
And can you still, you know, I'm thinking, for example, Donald Trump, you know, or Boris Johnson, whatever your opinions are on there. Do you still find that curiosity of going, yeah, be you, like Donald Trump, like, be all exactly that kind of person who you are, the persona.
Can you
still apply that curiosity to that? Or do you still find a reactivity or a judgment inside of you that goes, I wish you were different?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all of it.
Yeah.
All of the above. So just as you were speaking there, I thought, oh yeah, there's the evil people that we don't, you know, and that's always the argument. But what about the evil people?
Yeah.
And it's they are pretty horrible. That is true.
Mm.
A million times over. I'm not saying, oh yeah, go be more horrible. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think what I would say is, but my curiosity, when you say, well, is the curiosity there? So if I had the horrible person in front of me, and I was coaching them, I hope that we could work together on what they were a baby once. It's that, but I mean, it's not my agenda to say, well, you must be cured of your badness.
Mm.
I think it's that having the curiosity around those feelings of, oh God, yeah, that's true.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-mm. It's allowing yourself to think about all the different variations.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, what I'm hearing is the idea is not to go, hey, if you're an arsehole or if you're like a criminal, then yay.
Yeah.
Be a criminal and be all that. As a, you know, the same way as if you're a shy, or if you're an introvert, be more shy, be more introvert. And there's this kind of conversation I want to steer towards. It's really hard. And I love how you kicked off the interview. It's like, it's really hard to be yourself.
Mm.
Why is it so hard to be ourselves?
Mm. I think because we, from a very early age, put on our layers.
Mm.
You know, it's like, do well at school, be a good boy, be a good girl, learn in this way, always only put your hand up if you know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of the things we learn. By the time we finish with a person, they've put on all these different layers that have kind of covered up the little person that they started off as. And I think that's why it's so hard, because we get so remote from who we really are. Mm. We don't know who we really are because we're living a life which feels normal to us. Because we're wearing the coat.
Yeah.
So unpicking all, taking it all off feels very hard, because the things, the shoulds, feel right.
Mm. Yeah. Have you explored like shadow work?
I've done that.
Yeah. Well, I'm especially interested because I think a topic of conversation that's been happening on the show and in my own life is around this idea of what are the aspects inside of ourselves that we don't own.
Yeah.
And that we actually go, that's good. Yeah. That's bad.
Absolutely. I think.
And
that's
let
really
me
right.
just shine light on what's good and let me show the world.
Yeah.
All that's that I'm good, but actually this part of me that I'm ashamed of, that I make wrong, that I judge, let me park that away.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you, in your work, you've actually noticed that, played with that, and then how do you actually help people embrace that part of themselves?
Well, I think that's an exciting piece. So my job isn't to make sure they embrace that part of themselves, because it's never usually as obvious as that. Something will come up in a session for somebody. You know, for example, they might say, oh, you know, I often find, say something like this, I often find people don't like me. Things like that, you know, or I don't get the reaction I want from people. And so that would be a pause button right there. And so then the questions will go along that line. What is it you think they don't like about you? Oh, you know, I say the wrong thing. Okay, like what? We start to unpick, and don't stop unpicking. I mean, this is coaching, you know all about this. And then we might get to a point where they say, well, I say what I see. And that's where you might say, well, that's amazing. I love that you say what you see.
Yeah.
What about that is a problem?
And
that's when they might go, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like
I mean,
that.
That's a sort of simple example.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, you know, there's other cases. I had Johnny Benjamin come on the show, who's a mental health activist, and who talked about the challenges of coming out. He's Jewish, and coming out of the Jewish community as gay, and coming out at the same time with his mental health issues. And I'm thinking about someone who's got, whether that's their sexual orientation, whether it's, but something that's part of who they are, but find it hard to let the world experience them. I'm so afraid of going over that that bridge of going from what a makeup I need to be, because I do a workshop and there's something I call the authenticity gap, and it's between who you really are and what you think you need to be, and that perceived gap is how you feel authentic, right? So how what would be some practical tips or some stuff you'd love to say, to share a message? Someone listening to this right now, who may be in a relationship and they know they need to get out of that relationship. They may be in a job and they know they should probably get another job, but they're afraid that change will create cataclysmic kind of earthquakes around them.
Yeah, it's so scary. So I noticed that when you were speaking, what's his name, Johnny Benjamin?
Johnny Benjamin, yeah.
Yeah. So I noticed when you described what he shared was that I started feeling quite teary. And what came up for me was that sense of, wow, that must be so lonely. So lonely. And I was sort of thinking of the chorus of voices that he must have heard, which told him that's unacceptable, that is wrong. And the little kid in the bedroom feeling very alone.
Yeah.
And then having to be a bright little boy and go about his business.
Yeah.
So this is a long story. This is like a long way of answering your question, which is, I think really, really a million times over, the first thing is to get very connected to what is going on for you. Because because you can't really start to use your strategic brain, in what am I going to do, before you
get real with what's going on.
Yeah, because in there is the information. Mm-hmm. Wow, I feel so lonely. That feels so lonely. That feels so painful. And waiting to see what wisdom comes up, because it's so courageous, isn't it? To be going about your business every single day and feeling so sad.
Mm.
There's courage in that. And seeing what it takes for you to maintain that facade, all that energy.
Yeah.
Wow, I have the courage to do that. I have the energy to do that. Maybe I have the courage and energy to change.
Mm.
And so I think for me, it's about really getting connected to what's going on inside yourself.
Mm-hmm.
First, your emotions. Your emotions are so full of information.
Yeah.
And then listen, get very quiet and see what they're telling you.
Yeah. As opposed to trying to run away from them or avoid them.
Yeah.
Yeah, sugarcoat them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's some school of thought. I mean, I've got a few friends or coaches in a different kind of training that didn't go through our kind of training. And it's interesting, we're having this conversation about they learn more to kind of like change your state. You know, it's all about your state, and it's all about like whenever you're feeling down or depressed or tired or whatever, just change your state.
Right.
And you know, you can get out of any state.
Right.
And it was really interesting because one of them, I kind of did a bit of, you know, some coaching, just having some chats, and explained to him about actually the power of emotions and feelings.
Yeah.
And that there's so much wisdom in that. Instead of having to override them and just change your state straight away, how about like, hey, are you letting enough space and time for you to feel that? Because there may be something in there that is actually holding you back, or the key of...
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm getting such a big rush of agreement.
Yeah.
Because when we step on our feet, when we continually we kind of hear the echo of the feelings, don't we? And we just push that away. That's too uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But when you allow them space, first of all, they don't run you anymore.
Yeah.
Because there'll be a lot of fear in there as well.
Yeah.
Second of all, it's just full of information about who you are.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but I've had a previous guest. I loved him. James Sexton. He's a divorce lawyer, trial divorce lawyer in New York.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw that.
Brown belt now, actually. Something like that, of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Love James. If you're listening to this, let's get you back on the show. But anyway, so one of the things, he's written a book called If You're Already in My Office, It's Already Too Late. And he shares these stories of clients that have gone through a divorce. And one of the commonalities I found between all these stories is that often they have something that they want to express, whether that's a fantasy, whether that's a need, whether that's a desire, what have you. And somewhere along the way, they made up that they couldn't say that, or they couldn't share that with their partner.
Right.
So what often happens is that they'll find an extra marital partner to express that with. And a lot of divorce, like one man in particular, there was a story about a man, he said, I don't want to spoil the story in the book, but it's one of the stories, one of Mary's stories.
Oh, cool,
he talked about how this man really loved to wear women's underwear.
Right.
And he's like, he was what you would call a traditional like blokey bloke, American football and all this stuff. But he loved to wear bras and underwear. And he couldn't tell, they had kids, he couldn't come around to tell his partner. And so he ended up having an affair with a woman who he could, and she found out. It was a big dramatic blow, and it ended up... And every time he asked them, what do you wish?
Yeah.
You know, often one of the things he says once they've gone through the whole divorce, he says, you know, what is there a thing if you could go back in time and you could change, what would it be?
Yeah.
And they always say, I wish I'd just had the courage to say...
To say it.
Yeah, because she might have said, yes.
Oh, I knew.
Or I knew, or I knew. I'm in that too. Or actually, as one of my friends, Eugen, taught me in the tantric kind of practice, where you get to ask your partners for what you need or want, and then the partner can say, not today, which I love.
Absolutely. Such you a beautiful a choice.
It's like, not today, but maybe tomorrow, maybe never, maybe in a year, but not today.
I love that.
So you've written a book.
I've written a book.
We're holding it.
That's it.
It's very exciting. So before we get into the wisdom of the book, how was it like, the process and journey of writing the book?
Well, I know. So I've written extensively as well about... Yeah. I'm sort of my own lab rat, if you like, because It was really hard.
Yeah.
It was super hard, yeah. Honestly. So I've always liked writing, yeah. And I've done quite a lot of creative writing, yeah. And did writing classes, yeah. And all of that. But I never got to the point where I was actually publishing a book.
Yeah.
And so when I started coaching and I had all this new information in my head, I wanted to write it down.
Yeah.
I wanted to write a book, but I never...
Why did you want to write a book? I'm just curious. I'm always curious, like, what was it about the book that you wanted to...
I think it was... there's the altruistic, mm-hmm. reason, which is I feel I've got something to share.
Sure.
Which I think people will find useful. Mm-hmm. And also the personal reason, which is I really want to say I finally,
yeah.
got the things that are inside me onto the page. And here it is. This is the product.
Yeah.
And it's tangible. Mm-hmm. And I've allowed other people to read it. It's not just sitting in my bottom drawer at home.
Got it.
And so, but nevertheless, because of the nature of this book, mm-hmm. which is quite personal. I share a lot of personal stuff. Mm-hmm. I was quite scared of... there's all sorts of things. I mean, by the way, I'm scared a lot.
Mm.
I experience fear a lot. And so this was like a super fear, every ingredient. So there was the fear of oversharing.
Yeah.
The fear of what other people will think.
Sure.
The fear of what especially my family might think.
Mm.
The fear of what my friends will think, the fear of what the stranger in the street will think, and then the fear of the possibility of doing this, mm-hmm. and you asking me a question that I can't answer, that kind of fear, or
yeah.
I'll stumble into oversharing,
yeah.
The whole world I'm might implode. See me,
yeah.
I might lose a bit of my identity,
mm-hmm.
I might sort of deconstruct. All that weird stuff.
Sure.
Right at the edge of fear.
Did all that happen?
Well, fortunately. I mean, fortunately I had a coach.
Yeah.
That's how come I got to write the book, because I don't think otherwise I would have. And so all of those, we worked through all of that,
mm-hmm.
before publication day.
Mm.
And so, yes, those things are happening.
Mm.
Quite honestly, yes. People are reading the book and they are saying things. And I'm thinking, oops.
Mm.
Or, didn't they not like it? Sometimes they don't say anything. That's weird.
Mm.
You sort of think, oh, you didn't like it, did you? And then having this interview. Like, you're a really good interviewer and you're really intense. And... Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, you're really into a very...
grounded?
No. Not grounded.
So what do you mean by intense?
Like that. Because you hold gaze.
Mm.
You really hold eye contact.
Yeah.
And also, you keep going. Like, you ask very pertinent, deep questions.
Mm.
And so that, yeah, I feel I can't avoid, I'm quite clever at avoiding.
Mm. Okay.
So I can't avoid answering.
Yeah. I mean, it's the nature of the show as well, isn't it? It's kind of like, that's why I love doing this. It's why I've been doing it for 4 years. It's kind of, and it's interesting because it's, I think, no one's put it that way, and it's definitely a way of seeing it, right? Like intensity of it. And I think it's what I strive for. It's real.
Mm, it's very real.
We have very real conversations. Yeah. I've had people open about things about their sexuality, their health, their relationships, people in tears, all this stuff's happening because I feel my duty through this is to create a space where with you and me and or a guest, we can have a real conversation where it's going to be, it's not going to be like kind of like, tell me the 7 steps of your book, you know, and kind of like, hi guys, like by, you know, because you're going to have interviews like that. You're going to have people who are going to get you to ask the typical questions you're going to get every time. So tell us, how did you know all this stuff? And I think there's, for me, there's a hunger in the world for this.
Mm.
For real.
For real.
Yeah, for real. For real. Like, but like just kind of go, great. Like you wrote a book. You're a coach with 10 years of experience. You know, you've got all these accomplishments and you're human.
Mm.
You know,
absolutely.
And there's still stuff you're going through. There's still stuff you're feeling. Mm. And I want to normalize that so that people who are just at the beginning of the journey don't feel so alone.
Mm.
When they see us, when they hear us, whether it's this interview or the 120 other interviews on this show, they go, oh,
yeah.
I thought that they had everything together, that they were like there, whatever the position is. But actually, they're like me. Their heartbeats, you know, their fears, our presence there, and so I just want to honor and come back to the question. You're going through some stuff. Some stuff is happening that you were afraid of, and you're working through it. And is there a part of you that is able to hold on to the gift that this book is and kind of the achievement that you've managed to put out into the world, despite all those fears?
Absolutely. I mean, I've got a peace. I feel peaceful. I've noticed that I've started to wake up again in the morning feeling I'm peaceful.
I love that.
Because I feel like for such a long time this self-expression has been waiting to come out. And not just see, for me, I can often play games with myself around, oh, well, I've written the book. That's enough. You know, that's fine. That's enough.
I've done my job.
Yeah, I've done my job. So I don't need to publish the book. You know, I don't need people to read my book. I mean,
was enough.
And I see that a lot in my work. Public speaking. People will say, oh, you know, I've learned the training now. I don't need to go and do the talk.
Got it.
It's the visibility.
It's
the visibility to say what you really think and feel and allow the spotlight to be on me.
Yes.
That was huge.
Wow.
And I feel proud of myself
that
I went through that and I'm here.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it.
And you're more visible.
And I'm much more visible.
Yeah.
And it is still a bit scary, but I'm very proud of myself because I've done it.
What's scary about it?
I think. I think it's not about so much the being seen. Because I like being seen. It's more about the intrusion of the view into the self. I think that we all have a self, don't we? An id. I think it's something to do with the id, the ego and the id, the who you are piece. And I think that that's quite, for all of us, a tender place. Like maintaining your sense of self so that you keep it for you.
Yeah.
And I think there's something about the harsh light that starts intruding that can start messing with your sense of self. I think that's the scary part.
Interesting. The word naked came. I don't know why. The word naked came up. It's this idea of here's who I am.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm exposed. It's like naked and exposed came. I don't know why.
And I think it's even further because if I think about people in the public eye and how sometimes they collapse, they can't take it anymore. You know, and they fiercely protect their privacy. It's that piece, and I was thinking, now why would you want that? And I think it's to do with some part of you needs to be kept private. It's the private.
I get that.
That's important. So the fear is that it's the intrusion, I think.
Yeah. And is it almost like the fear of there won't be a part left for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, I think, feels a bit precarious.
Yeah. I get that. And I think it's also, the way I see like anything, it's like a pendulum. You know, you're going and you're looking for your balance between, hey, becoming visible, sharing this, and then there might be a point like, actually, you know what? I'm going to hold on to that.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be mine and yeah. to cherish. And that doesn't mean I'm robbing other people from an experience of who I am. But
yeah.
And I see, when I grew up, I dreamt of becoming an actor. I wanted to become the next Tom Cruise, the Brad right. Pitt, all that stuff. I wanted to become famous and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And as I grew up, I live in Hampstead, right, North London, and
I know it.
It's like the mecca of cool celebrities a little bit. Like there are lots of singers and yeah. actors and movie directors. They live there, and it's interesting because when you live in Hampstead, you don't really talk to them, you don't approach them. They're kind of like unicorns, you know. You don't go and touch them because they might disappear and never come back. But they're walking around, and you see everyone like stopping them or staring at them. Mm. And like I saw exactly. Martin Freeman with his kids,
yeah.
Walking up the high street, and people stopping him, take pictures, and his kids are there. And I just thought it must be really hard,
yeah,
because you've got no, and I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, anonymity. That's yeah. it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're just
owned.
Yeah, because imagine like you're a celebrity or whatever. Yeah. You go to the beach.
Yeah.
God forbid you wouldn't have a six pack.
Yeah.
Someone's going to be there taking a photo of you, yeah. uploading it, you know, the sun yeah, splash yeah, front
yeah,
page.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're constantly.
Yeah, the destruction.
Yeah, being observed. And just to come back to like what I feel this is speaking more to, it's about what are the part of you that you're not letting the world experience for the sake of you being able to be yourself?
Exactly.
Not in the sense of yeah. overshare, whatever the terms are, but yeah. more,
yeah.
hey, if you're shy, yeah. if you're an introvert, yeah. and if you need to get your energy from yeah. spending some time alone, why are you fighting against it?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
what like have some boundaries, exactly. you know, make sure that...
So right.
Because especially I think in today's world, you know, whether that's on social media or if you go to leadership training courses and companies and employee engagement stuff, it's all about be more vocal and speak up and shout and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And for some people, like my partner's introvert. And I've learned so much.
Yeah.
You know, we made a joke about introverts have feelings too. You yes. know, when you go to a conference or an event yeah. and I'm speaking,
yeah.
people ask questions. It's very hard for introverts to kind of process maybe the question on the spot and then raise their hand and speak up.
Absolutely.
So, Live Out Loud. The book is published. It's out. I remember when you sent sharing emails and you communicated, you said, oh, the book's going to be coming out and it's out now.
Mm.
There's something tangible. What I love about books, there's something tangible to them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
do you remember the first time you held it in your hand?
Do you know, the funny thing about me is that I sometimes miss the big moments.
Don't we all?
Like, I think, I actually don't really
remember. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I know there's that box, the box of,
yeah.
or the copy that came yeah. not for resale.
Yes.
It didn't feel like that big a deal.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I'd already been through that moment in my head.
Yes. And also people who haven't written a book, it's a long process. It's
yeah.
I don't know if you can relate to this. I remember yeah. by the time I published my book, having to talk about it and having to promote it was just like, oh God, like I can't see this book one more time.
Yeah.
And I remember getting to that book launch day and having to reconnect to why.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, yesterday, because I knew I was coming on the show,
yeah.
I thought I'd better memorize the book
okay.
in case you ask
yeah.
me. You know?
Yeah.
So I sat down in the garden and I read a couple of chapters.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow, this is interesting. Yeah. I mean, it does say, it says that place where it becomes quite separate from you.
Yes. yeah, when you read, oh my God, wait a couple of years. yeah. I wrote mine in 2013, published in 2014, and I try and read it maybe once every couple of years. Mm. And I'll read it, I'm like, I wrote that? it's like, okay, wow.
Well, go me.
Yeah. And, yeah. and there's something that, you know, we exchanged on Instagram. I really want to talk about it. We talked about speaking your truth.
Yes.
Do you remember?
Yes.
And that sometimes, I think that I read it somewhere when I was going through the book just yeah. kind of briefly. There was something about staying silent sometimes
yeah.
can be speaking your truth.
Absolutely.
So what?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What, tell me more about that. What do you mean by that?
So you don't always have to. You're always at choice.
Mm.
Like, I mean, I am a great one. This is going back to the relationships.
Yeah.
I am a great one for. We've got to talk about this.
Yes.
Let's talk about this. Let's mm-hmm. talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, it's like step back
mm.
and actually really just choose not to talk about. Mm-hmm. Let's not talk about this. That feels radical.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
I get that.
Yeah.
I get that.
Let's actually not talk about it and see
what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, we call it, what we call it, it's a technical sitting on an urge. And it's like you have an urge to speak about something and then sit on it to see, was it really needed? Mm-hmm. Why was it coming from? Mm-hmm. You know, like I had this experience recently where, long story short, someone part of a community I'm in was doing a project for us and created something, and it wasn't what I would have called it. And it didn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. And my urge was to say, well, why are we calling it that way? And it shouldn't be this way. Mm-hmm. And I sat on it and I just said, thank you.
Yeah, cool.
And that was radical. So I get that. Radical. Yeah, it was because it took more.
Have to.
Yeah, it was more of an effort.
Yeah.
To actually go, is it me?
Yeah.
Is it coming from me? If I'm like my ego needing to say something, or am I saying it in the service of?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's really important. I mean, I used to be someone. I was someone who. I was bold in what I would say.
Yeah.
And sometimes it landed, sometimes it didn't.
Mm.
But I have learned through all the training I've done to get much more intentional
about your impact.
Yeah, conscious about why I might be saying something. As you say, what is this for? And then there's that other, and that's really important. But then there's that other place where you kind of, the urge takes you, and regardless,
you just go.
You've got to speak up,
and
I think that's the real power. That's a powerful place where nothing matters. Actually, you just got to say it.
When was the last time that happened to you?
Wow, when was the last time
that you saw something, or witnessed something, or heard about something?
I mean, yeah. So, I often find myself in training rooms, and training rooms, I'm a public speaking trainer, and I find training really, really hard. I think it's one of the hardest jobs, because especially for someone like me, where things are coming at me, you know, the whole I'm getting hits of and sometimes it feels like I'm supposed to be like a lawyer in those rooms. Like,
got it.
I must structured make sure my landing sense. Point, my learning points land.
Yeah.
And I've got to take people through, you know, logic.
Yeah.
And I can get really flustered.
Yeah.
But in all that commotion, also, I can often hear the subtext of what is going
really going on. Yeah.
Yeah, what's really going on. And I just remember, I mean, this is like a real strong memory. Maybe it wasn't the last time, but it's a strong memory of something happened between two delegates, and someone said something, and I could see that person go, and I named it. And it's that, and that was powerful for those two people. And so that, I remember that, not because of what happened there, just because that sense of listening to what's going on and saying, pause.
Yeah.
Pause.
Are you noticing?
Yeah. Yeah. Right here, right now. That's very powerful.
I love that. So one of the things I'm taking away is that, before you get into action steps, before you think about strategizing or doing, first get really clear about how you're feeling. Really experience what's going on for you. Where's the frustration? Where's the yearning for more? What is the place in your life, whether that's in your relationships, whether that's in your friendships, your workplace, your family, where you're not allowing yourself to be you and respect you and boundaries and all, and just tap into how you're feeling first.
Name absolutely that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Absolutely.
We're coming towards the end of the interview. That went by so fast. And I just want to say, first of all, thank you for your energy. Mm. I want to say that because I think you've got a beautiful, delightful energy of both depth and spark, you know, that can happen in a flick of a switch. Mm. And I think that's really cool. It's very powerful, compelling. And I also want to acknowledge you for having written a book.
Oh, thanks.
Because having gone through a similar process myself years ago, having friends going through it right now, people don't realize. I used to say as a joke, I'm a book writer, I said as a joke, it will be the closest thing I'll ever do to giving birth.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't even, you know, pretend it's the same pain, but it's a big achievement and you've done it. You know, and now it's out in the world and I know it can be really vulnerable and it can feel exposing and it can feel all sorts. And for all those feelings, everyone else who's reading it is getting something out of it. I want to say it's worth it because of that. That's a judgment on part, you know, it's almost like an agenda to it, but there's a real gift to it.
Thanks.
And so I hope that people who listen to this will get a copy. You. Where can people get a copy?
Amazon.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go to my website.
Yeah, what's your website?
Outloudcoaching.com.
Outloudcoaching.com. Love that.
And the link's there or just straight onto Amazon.
Very cool. Mm. What's one thing that most people don't know about you?
How wobbly I am inside.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Thank you for sharing. There's, do you know Lewis Howes, School of Greatness?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was hanging out with him in London and I asked him, he's interviewed 400 people plus, right, from all sorts, athletes, blah, blah, blah. And I asked him, what's the one thing you found in common that we all share? And he says, we're all fragile.
Mm.
He says, we're all fragile inside. Yeah. We all have something inside of us that wobbles us, that scares us, that gets in our way.
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's not what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
So you just reflected exactly what we all, so thank you for, thank you for being light of that. If, imagine Piccadilly Circus.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got those now new digital boards, which is, I haven't been there in a while, but they're all digital. And for a day, you could have a message that is read across that board that everyone's going to be walking, looking at, soaking in. What would you want that message to be?
Live out loud.
Mm. Yeah.
Really, really.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Take that. And what does being unconventional mean to you?
Having another thought.
What do you mean by that?
So, being conventional is having the same thought.
Ah. I love that.
And being unconventional is going,
what if?
That's not right.
Yeah.
That can't be right.
Yeah,
it's
that.
Maybe that's not right, and maybe this is
a
possible
very
alternative.
Cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. So we've got your website down. Your Instagram. What's your handle on Instagram?
Quietly out loud.
Quietly at quietly out loud. Go and check her out. I think it's really cool. I hope the book goes and does wonder. I hope you get to continue coaching people to be themselves and to live out loud what that means to them.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing your journey and being a cheerleader from the side.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
All right, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's interview. Really powerful stuff. I loved how real this conversation has been and just exploring that question again. What does it mean for you to live out loud? What's your version? And it may be speaking up more. And actually, it might be just to take a step back. And it might be just a center about who you are, what you're feeling, and then allowing the world to experience you for who you are, whatever that version is. And that's a beautiful reminder. Once again, if you're excited about the idea of launching your own podcast, if you want to go from being a listener to a content creator, and if you want to put your message out into the world, whether that's a passion or a message that you want to put out, then I'd love to see you on the 20th of September, 2019 in London for a one day where we get to jam everything about podcasting. All the tickets information are below this website. And as always, I appreciate you. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, go over on YouTube and subscribe. And if you're listening to this on iTunes, you know where to hit the button with a nice review. And we've got some very exciting guests lined up to finish season 13. Can you believe it? We're finishing season 13. But until then, stay hydrated, enjoy your summer, go wild, but not too much. I'll see you soon.